For most of its life, the CIA was banned from propagandizing Americans. But we learned that they were doing it anyway. So in 1973, during the Church Committee hearings, we learned that the CIA had a program called Operation Mockingbird, where they had at least 400 members, leading members of the United States Press Corps, and the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, CBS, NBC, etc., who were secretly working for the agency and steering news coverage to support CIA priorities. And they agreed at that time to disband Operation Mockingbird in 73. But there's indications they didn't do that. And they still, the CIA today is the biggest funder of journalism around the world.
Wow, that is RFK Jr., if you didn't recognize that distinctive voice. And he's talking about the cooperation of the intelligence agencies and the deep state with media to mold our minds and to make us think what they want us to think. Today is part two with Dr. Robert Malone, and it ties into his book called Psy War, Enforcing the New World Order. Now, you usually think of Dr. Malone, most of you, and rightly so, as the leader in the opposition against the COVID vaccines. And certainly was vested in that very deeply because he's an internationally recognized virologist and immunologist, a clinical research and regulatory affairs expert. He's a U.S. federal contract proposal and project manager and the original inventor of the mRNA delivery and vaccination as a technology. So when he saw COVID unfolding the way it did and the shots unfolding the way they did, he spoke out vehemently against them and continues to do that. But right now, as you'll hear me talk, Dr. Malone has a very, very big brain. That's the way I'd say it. And his thoughts are not limited to medicine. He has done this book, which explores what's happening with the deep state, with the CIA. I've heard him lecture more than once, that's for sure, on the involvement of the CIA. That's just one agency. Certainly the optics, the psyop on us about COVID, whether it was distancing and masking and scaring us and using it as a sort of an exercise in seeing how far they could go to control the United States and its citizens. Pretty frightening stuff. But now he's gone into a broader discussion of this, and that's enforcing the New World Order. And I think you're going to find it fascinating. I ask him in the first part, what's behind all of this? What is behind all of this? People want to know. And today he'll answer that question. Let me remind you that abortion has remained the world's leading cause of death for the fifth consecutive year in 2023, despite the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Tragically, this total is greater than the number of deaths attributed to the next seven causes of death combined. And sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at an even greater risk now. And that's why the need for preborn. Preborn reaches the moms to show them their babies inside the womb via these ultrasounds. They reach them not only to save the life of the baby, but also save the heart and sometimes the life of the mother herself. If you would like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, Truth Social. You can find us on YouTube also. Sometimes we do things on camera. You can go to AFR.net and listen to the podcast. That is Home Base American Family Radio. You can go to sandyrios.com and find it, or you can go to any podcast platform. I would just like to say, I did this interview with Dr. Malone, which is always a challenge because of his intellect, without any prep. I didn't even have his book. But I loved it. I enjoyed talking with him with my limited capacity, and I hope that my limited capacity doesn't interfere with your fascination with his answers. It's just fascinating stuff on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
People want to know, like, where in the world is this coming from? I know that we can't say one thing, but you talk about the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the European Union.
And the United Nations.
And the United Nations. Can you just address what role they're playing?
So, when we talk about the New World Order or globalism, what we're talking about, of course, it's outlined in Klaus Schwab's book, The Great Reset. So this is not a conspiracy theory, as is labeled by YouTube. This is something that the first George Bush talked about extensively, the New World Order, and this world order.
He liked it, though.
Yeah, exactly. The new structure of globalism. Many people do. John Kerry does.
Oh, yes, of course,
right?
He does.
I
know it's not funny, but I just can't sometimes help but laugh.
The current and former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Starmer in the UK are both trained by the World Economic Forum. They're tightly associated with the World Economic Forum. So what are these big powers? And behind them, there are these transnational globalist organizations, non-governmental organizations, and, quote, think tanks like the Atlantic Council and the Bilderberg Group, et cetera. So the structure,
Rockefellers.
The structure that's currently being advanced very actively, and particularly recently with the United Nations Pact for the Future that was endorsed by over 160 countries, which is a plan to accelerate Agenda 2030, which has the force of treaty law, international treaty law in the United States, because Barack Obama signed it as he was heading out the door at the end of his presidency. So what is envisioned is, and there is a formal alliance now between the World Economic Forum, which our CIA created.
What's our CIA?
The United States Central Intelligence Agency.
Oh,
created,
our CIA. Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay,
Klaus Schwab's mentor was Henry Kissinger.
Okay. No kidding.
The WEF came out of some key meetings.
I did not know that.
That happened around Harvard and the Northeast academic elite. So
I'm not really surprised, by the way, but I didn't know.
Well,
that.
It's one of those things, you know, when the penny drops, suddenly some other things start to make sense,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
So that's all the case. It's well documented. There's a video of Klaus Schwab on an anniversary thanking Henry Kissinger for his mentorship, et cetera, et cetera. It's all out in the open. One of the amazing things, I think, about the WEF is that they tell you what it is that they are talking about.
They do.
About.
They can't help but brag.
Yeah, they brag, exactly. They feel totally unrepentant
it's
and
like
immune.
Criminals. My husband is an FBI agent. He would say they can't be quiet. You know, once they've accomplished, like
they
that
want to brag
famous
about
spy,
it.
Robert, whatever his name was, could after he deceived us for years and did all this damage with the USSR, he couldn't help but spill the beans later and brag about how he had pulled it all off. So,
yeah. Yes. Yeah, so this new structure that is being advanced incrementally through Agenda 2030 and the Pact for the Future and these other, quote, international treaties, and they have the force of law, even though they're just passed by the president, because basically the Senate is asleep at the switch. The Senate is not doing its job in reviewing and conceding or concurring with international treaties. So it's happening through the executive only.
Could I just interject something practical? I'm sorry, but I want people to understand. One of the reasons the Senate is so feckless is because Mitch McConnell
Absolutely.
Has enriched himself in that position, has surrounded himself with people that are like him. You see his lieutenants, it's like a don of a mafia.
Yeah.
And he makes sure they all get rich, And they have just done horrible things under his leadership. And right now, this, you might not hear this till after the election, but nevertheless, before the election here, there are several senators who are great, who are not getting any money, zero, zip, nada from Mitch McConnell, because he runs the fund that that helps senators get reelected or elected.
Yeah.
And he's refusing to help people like Kerry Lake and another guy in
but
Nevada.
But McConnell's supposedly out after this term.
Yeah, but he's got his hand-picked person in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, but that's why we're there.
The reason why the Republican Party is now almost irrelevant, you know, most of the conservatives around me refer to themselves as constitutionalists.
Yes,
constitutional conservatives, and they don't want to be affiliated with the Republican Party. I'm not going to name names, but there are many senior conservative leaders that have distanced themselves from the Republican Party, particularly the National Republican Party.
That's
for exactly
right.
That reason. I mean, it is the uniparty.
So you were saying the Senate has not done anything about these
They are asleep at the switch in terms of these international treaties. So it's the use of these international treaties, which have the force of law, has been implemented in an incremental way to advance the agenda and logic of the United Nations as a new global government.
And it does so well right now. The United Nations is so functional.
Well, they believe, like a lot of totalitarian regimes, they believe that in what they're doing, in what their plans are, in the wisdom and effectiveness. The Director General of the United Nations used to be head of the Socialist International. He is a socialist, okay? He is the former socialist prime minister of Portugal. He came up under, at the time of the socialist revolution against Salazar in Portugal. Then he became head of the Socialist Party. Then he became prime minister. By the way, the Portuguese think he was an abject failure. And then he became head of the Socialist International, and then he became head of the United Nations. He is a baked-in-the-wool socialist, and he has transformed the United Nations from its original charter to avoid wars, world wars, negotiate peace, etc., to advancing socialist causes. And what he's done, this is really important, Sandy, because the left has, as we were discussing earlier, tried to appropriate the term fascism and apply it to anyone on the populist right, whether it's Giorgio Meloni or Javier Milei or Donald Trump. It's their go-to defamation is to accuse somebody of being a fascist. But fascism is, by definition, including by Benito Mussolini, who knew something about the topic, the intersection or fusion of corporatism and socialism. That's what it is.
Wow, I never thought of that.
It doesn't come from the right. It comes from the left every single time. Now, every time it has a little bit of a different flavor. That's not to say that today's socialists are Hitlerian Marxists, fascists. But socialism and corporatism seem to have a predilection for each other historically. And that fusion of those kinds of interest is technically, in a political science sense, the definition of fascism. And that is absolutely what is being advanced. So there is a formal treaty agreement between the World Economic Forum, which is a corporatist organization. I argue that it is essentially a corporatist trade alliance of the 1,000 largest companies in the world, the transnational, big transnationals, and all in partnership. That is what the World Economic Forum represents. And they have a partnership with this socialist transnational organization called the United Nations, of which the World Health Organization is a division. And they, together, literally, in their literature, they believe that they represent the world government. They are the world government now. And the way this structure works is very much modeled after the European Union. So this is where the EU comes in. Again, the United States created the European Union. We created that model. And the European Union If you look at the structure, we think of Europe as a group of separate Westphalian nation states, but they're not. The nation states in Europe have similar or even less power and autonomy than the states do here in the United States, because their constitution is not as binding in the same way that ours is. And so the Bundestag, this was explained to me by Christine Anderson of the Alliance for Deutschland Party, who's been so outspoken, first explained to me, but now the documentation is clear. It's out in Politico. I was just reviewing it. Unheard ran an article. So the way the European Union is structured is that the elected members of the European Parliament that sit in Brussels gather great salaries. They've got drivers, they've got offices, they've got all kinds of perks, but they have virtually no power. The power is all in the appointed European Council and in the president, which sits over the European Council, currently Ursula von der Leyen, who is mentored by Angela Merkel. So von der Leyen had a significant challenge to her authority after the most recent European Parliament elections, in which there was a surge in support for the populist parties like the Brothers of Italy, and Marie Le Pen's group and the Alliance for Deutschland, which, by the way, was virtually outlawed in Germany, not allowed to raise money. So there was this populist center-right surge and a challenge to von der Leyen's appointment, but she was reappointed, not elected, reappointed. And so what she's done now that she's back in power again, second term of appointment, she's appointed a European Council which is entirely allied with her. So these are essentially the functional bureaucrat, appointed bureaucrats. And what she's done is set up things so that they can keep the populist center-right out of power as long as possible. And remember that the thing that really got her in trouble was that she unilaterally cooked a deal with Pfizer to buy all these vaccines and force all the people in the European Union to take the vaccine. So that's the model that is being implemented on a global basis, but instead of, and I forgot to mention, the European Council can overrule anything that any of the independent European Union parliaments come up with. So if the Bundestag votes for something, the European Council can say, no, we're not going to allow you to do that, okay? So it's, like I said, it actually has, they have less autonomy in the European states than our states do in terms of the federal government. But they use a lot of the same tricks. So that's the model for this new globalist organization. But instead of the European Union, you have the United Nations.
To rule all of us, not just Europe.
And then sitting on top of that, okay, so guiding what they're going to make their priorities and their emphasis and their policies are these non-governmental organizations, global governance organizations like Gates Foundation, like the Bilderbergs, like the
Soros. His foundation.
Soros is a great example.
He has
organization that was set up to tie together all the advertisers.
Yes. I tried to take down Rush Limbaugh and
and me
and Fox. You too.
so that's the new world order that I'm talking about in the book, and what they're using their propaganda and censorship capabilities for is to ensure that the narratives now, not just to the U.S. government, but the narratives being promoted, the quote truth, being promoted on a global scale about climate change or choose your...
Or even sexual behavior, or transgenderism, all of that.
Ukraine, etc.
Ukraine, yes.
The only truths that are allowed into this new structure, and you've heard it with, for instance, the threats to jail Elon Musk.
Yes.
And to censor him and fine him. They want to only allow narratives that that are aligned with their political interests. So that when I speak about enforcing the New World Order, that's what I'm talking about, is they're using this fifth-generation warfare, psychological warfare technology, in order to enforce this new model for global governance, which is totalitarian. It is intrinsically totalitarian, and I argue it's intrinsically fascist, because it does represent the fusion of socialist and corporatist interests.
The interesting thing to me, Dr. Malone, it's overwhelming. I don't know if you were depressed after you wrote this, but it can be overwhelming and seemingly impossible.
Which is why the last part of the book is what you can do about it.
Okay, so what can people do about it?
I think it's really important to remember that the thing that got us into this position where they're able to use this kind of strategy, these technologies, to control what we're thinking and feeling is the fragmentation of society. And you started to talk about that in the beginning. You talked about fragmenting the society into two groups, but we've been splintered into far more than just two groups, right? And that splintering continues. It's an ongoing process. This part of wokeism, right, is this weaponization of language and redefining language and redefining group structure and out-groups and privileged groups and all of this struggle session, using a term from Maoist China, that is being used to totally split society, together with the effects of modern social media and communications platforms like cellular service, etc. The thing that has made us susceptible to the implementation of this kind of technology, made us particularly susceptible, is the fragmentation of society, the fragmentation of the family, the fragmentation of the church, the fragmentation of communities. And so it stands to reason, if they're so focused on dividing us from each other and destroying our communities, then the solution, the way to fight them, is to strengthen our commitment to family and community and our, if you're a person of faith, to your community of faith, and build up that local community, build it up to the next level, et cetera, et cetera. We need to come back together if we want to stay intact as an autonomous nation state in the United States. We have to learn to find common ground and to not allow these forces of division to tear us apart, because as we do that, we play right into the agenda of the very people that want to eliminate the United States, that feel that the United States and the United States Constitution are the biggest obstacles to their globalist objectives. And that is the essence of it.
And I think to put some flesh on it, we first maybe really became aware of this during COVID, where there was so much isolation.
Yes, yes.
And you talk about how that made people so susceptible. And that's the point you're trying to make. I was telling my husband during that time, because I know that I lived in Berlin during the Cold War. I've been in Russia and China and North Korea and Vietnam as a communist, lots of communist countries. And it's just an area of experience and interest for me. And I was trying to tell him that they try to, that's the whole point, they do try to isolate and separate people.
Yeah.
And any entity that gives you an identity, whether it's church, and I was telling him, like football and sports, they're going to come after football and sports. They're going to try to disrupt that because too many men circle around the TV and feel brotherhood over sports. And what did they do? I mean, he always says, you were right about that, but I was. Only because I've been around it for a long time. They even attack sports to separate, cause trouble in the NFL. And
wokeism. Wokeism is the tip of the spear in driving forward Marxism. And that is what has just totally taken over academia now. Mm-hmm. Taken over much of the coast, particularly the Northeast and the West Coast.
Colleges and universities.
It's taken over medical schools.
It's
pervasive, and it has a logical structure. And people, I don't get it why people overlook the fact that Kamala Harris's father was a Marxist professor.
They don't hear it because their social media is censored. I've talked about that. People don't have a clue, and they'll look at me. You're a little
from
bit off.
Planet Mars.
Yeah, but I'm not. Yeah. And I'm happy to say it over and over again. But one thing that encourages me, as you were going through the list of like world leaders that are under attack from the United Nations, like,
Erdogan, Javier Milei, Giorgio Meloni, Nigel Farage.
Yes, but the interesting thing is, Dr. Malone, they're very popular with the people, as you know. And in many of these countries, I would say, I'd have to think about it longer, but most of them, the elections were completely polluted or done away with. Otherwise, they would have been in power. So the people in these countries around the world are waking up, Australia too, I think.
One of the things I argue in the book, and Jill and I argue, is that the implementation of censorship and propaganda forces society into a situation in which it's not able to adapt to change. Think about it. The structure of censorship is intrinsically all about preventing people from discussing issues and coming up with new solutions, innovative new solutions, okay? And so what that does is it locks society into a set of suboptimal solutions at a time when we're experiencing rapid change. And the only way that humanity gets out of this in good condition is by being able to have active dialogue and to innovate. But they believe in utilitarianism, they believe in Malthusianism, and many of them believe in transhumanism, the idea that the human species is obsolete, that we've mismanaged the globe, and it's time for the human species to pass and for the evolution of a new entity to take our place, which is this man-machine fusion with artificial intelligence and robotics that we call transhumanism. And that is absolutely a dominant belief in the, let's call it, the Silicon Valley oligarch culture. And that's what they think they want to drive towards. And I find it odd. It exploits kind of a weakness that we have. We've all told ourselves that the thing that makes us human is our intellect, is our mind. But it's not. The thing that makes us human is our heart. It's our soul. And that can't be replicated by artificial intelligence. That's not a machine function, right? And so we have to go back to recognizing what it is that makes us human and recognizing that being human is something of value, something worth preserving. And these people that are intrinsically anti-human, we have to recognize them as the enemy and as the evil that they are. And we have to reject that. We have to come together and say the first principle, the unifying principle here, is that we are all human and we are pro-human. We are not anti-human. And that, I think, is the most essential element of the dynamics, the cultural dynamics that are going on, is are you pro-human or are you anti-human? And if you're pro-human, you've got to be for respecting others. You've got to be for committing to ethics. You've got to be for committing to fundamental values. You've got to be for committing to the family, committing to society. Those are all pro-human positions.
Helping people hurricanes.
You've got to recognize that there
babies in the womb.
There are two genders, right? The value of life. You have to be pro-life, fundamentally pro-life.
Right. For along the spectrum, you know, euthanasia, all of that. You know, it's just that. This, I believe, God has placed in our hearts. He has written His law in our hearts. He does say that. And that whole knowledge of the truth, the hearing the truth and knowing when you hear it. Let me just say, Dr. Malone, your book is called Cywar. I haven't repeated it enough. And the subtitle is Enforcing the New World Order. I want you to read a quote. It's not necessary. You know, this comes from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who I'll say while you're looking for that quote, was one of the great resistors in the Soviet Union. He ended up in the Gulag Archipelago, and he was a great intellectual, and You know, I would have to just go on record as reminding people the Soviet Union did not last, neither did communist China. Not really. It's a new form right now. It's not the same.
I call it predatory capitalism.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. So communism and this kind of totalitarianism has never lasted.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It never
centralized
lasts.
Planning doesn't work.
So there's a central theme that he brings up. I just think this is a great quote. You have it in your book.
So it's how we close the book out. We know that they are lying. They know that they're lying. They even know that we know they are lying. We also know that they know we know they are lying too. They, of course, know that we certainly know they know we know they are lying too as well. But still they are lying. In our country, and I think this applies to the United States now too, in our country, the lie has become not just a moral category, but the pillar industry of this country. It's become the norm in D.C.
Yes.
It is the core of D.C. culture, is the lie.
Yes, media also, yep. Coming out, a lot of it coming out of the main strand of them, out of D.C., New York, too.
Well, about the media, I make the point they're all owned by large corporations. So,
that's
of course,
true.
They're corporatist. How would you expect them to not be corporatist? This gets back to this famous Russian fable of the frog and the scorpion. Remember, when the scorpion convinces the frog to take him across the stream, and halfway across the stream, the scorpion stings the frog. And the question is, why does the scorpion sting the frog? And the answer is, because he's a scorpion. It's in his nature. And all of this whining about why is corporatist media acting to support the corporatists, of course they are. Why would you expect them to be anything different? It's in their nature.
And we can't leave without you. I know you don't mean that you're talking about businesses that thrive and succeed in free market capitalism. You're not talking about
that. That's a whole other thing. I gave a lecture at the Mises Institute now that I think has hit 1.4 million views on YouTube.
Where can people find that? So you can...
If you go to the Mises Institute,
Mises.
M-I-S-E-S,
okay.
Mises Institute. So the Mises is the key... representative of the Austrian School of Economics here in the United States. They're located down in Auburn, in Alabama. And I went there for Mises University, which is a one-week course they give to young people, largely, on economics. It was kind of amazing to be there and surrounded by these 18 to 24-year-olds, almost all of them homeschooled, avidly discussing economic theory and Austrian school economics, which of course is what Javier Millet is a professor of and student of, and it's what he's implementing in Argentina. So this is true free market capitalism,
What you're talking about.
No, I am talking. This is a separate topic. I talk about the logic of Austrian school economics and freedom of choice and free market capitalism quite frequently now.
But when you say corporatist, I wanted to make sure people didn't think, because people don't know economics. You're not talking about big businesses that are successful, that are following the law and have the good of their country and families in mind. You are.
There are always good players, good people. There are always organizations that are committed to ethics, but increasingly under the influence of the likes of BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, these very, very large transnational funds, the boards of directors and the leadership of these large transnational corporations have been forced into a position where if they want to have access to capital, they have to toe the line with these new policies like DEI and ESG. DEI is swept through the country, as we all know, and through the government, largely because Larry Fink and BlackRock Capital want them to. BlackRock controls the vast majority, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, they all co-own each other, control the vast majority of American industry, and they speak as if they are benign, neutral forces. That's not it at all. If they were benign, neutral forces, they wouldn't be promoting DEI and ESG. So that's So when I speak about corporatism, the large corporations have largely been co-opted because of the influence of bond markets and particularly these very large economic interests, consortia like BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, and Bank of America.
Well, I totally agree because I was thinking of Harley Davidson. They brought in a radical leftist German to run an American company with
and they
clients
went all
that
in,
are,
they went all in on DEI.
Yeah, exactly.
Same with John Deere.
Yes.
Let alone Target and Budweiser and all that crazy stuff. And the airline I fly on, United, is all in on DEI policies because they have to be. Because if you're a large corporation and you need access to capital in order to maintain operations, you've got to toe the line.
But I guess, and that's absolutely true. So now I understand your distinction. But historically, in America, we had companies that actually loved the Ford Motor Company and all that. That's what I was thinking.
And
free
many
market
of those,
capitalism.
And many of those companies back then, historically, were American-based. They were committed to American principles. They were based in the United States. They didn't export their capital for tax purposes, etc. This is one of the big changes that happened.
Or move
largely
overseas to get cheap labor.
This is one of the big changes that happened largely in the 80s, in particular, is this movement to remove, decouple capital from the source from which it sprang. So it used to be, if the capital, the profit, was being generated in country X, it would pretty much stay associated with country X and get plowed back under and reinvested. But now, under the transnational world order, this capital that's derived from wherever gets cut loose from its sources and from those that created that capital, the workers and management, and floats the world looking for a better return on investment. And if they can get a better return on investment in Thailand or Vietnam or communist
Bangladesh.
China or wherever the thing is, they're going to go there. And that may have once been American capital, and those may have once been American companies. But under the kind of trade agreements and structure that were proposed by Bill Clinton and his
Herbert Walker Bush too.
Also,
yes.
What we now recognize as the Uniparty.
Yeah.
Under the structure that was promoted then, this naive belief that we didn't have to have industrial capacity, that the United States was post-industrial, and we can live just off of financial services and what we call the virtual world. Didn't have
my husband
to be
always
concerned.
Says nobody works anymore. It's all virtual.
Yeah, well, that gets into another one of the topics in the book.
Okay.
Is that this kind of new caste society structure of physicals, virtuals, overlords, and machines is another one of the chapters. And this is the old logic of right versus left that you still hear promoted all the time is completely obsolete now. I mean, think about it. We now have the Democratic Party is the party of war. Liz Cheney is endorsing Kamala Harris.
I know.
What a flip-flop
this
that is.
This is when I laugh again, like I shouldn't, but I just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, so the old political structures, and where the press is still invested in those old models, they're completely obsolete.
Yeah, and so much of the military is too. A lot of
amen.
I'm trying to run out of words. The military-industrial complex. A lot of them are good people who were there during the Cold War and really were fighting Russia. And they still haven't cleared their heads of the new realities.
Well, and a lot of them are retiring
out. To the
out.
New realities.
A lot of them are retiring out.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're being replaced by younger people that have grown up with video games and
no knowledge of the world
and
or history.
So the kind of one great example to illustrate the point is the transgender movement and the logic that you and furries is an even more extreme
people
example.
People that want to be cats or other animals too.
Right, that you are whatever you believe yourself to be, that reality is a subjective thing. that is a function of your belief system. What matters is what you believe, not what true objective reality is. And this, of course, this is an essential component of the virtual cast. They've grown up in a world of Dungeons and Dragons,
right,
and video games,
right,
and all kinds of artificial realities. And so no surprise that they believe that reality is whatever they want it to be. That's what they've grown up with. That is their that's their formative experience. And so, of course, they believe politically and otherwise that that's the nature of the world. And unfortunately, they're going to have a hard wake-up call. Among other things, the people that are going to be made redundant, that's the kind word, right? The people that are going to be made redundant by artificial intelligence are the bloody coders. It's the programmers. It's the people that are living in the virtual world. And the people now that are making the bucks and increasingly autonomous are the physicals, the people that fix your, you know, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
Repair your car. Plumbing, all of that.
Those are the people that, and so what's happening? Well, the likes of BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard are sweeping through and buying up all of those small businesses.
Farmers, farmland, everything. Well, the book is called Cywar, and again, it's enforcing the New World Order. And now, Dr. Malone, I could just talk to you. I'm sure everybody says that, but I really enjoy it, and I think you just illustrated why I said you have a very large brain. And that's not it. We hardly touch what's in this book. We just touch the surface. But Dr. Malone speaks in plain English. It's not an academic. He can get into the details, but he writes and talks very understandably, as you can see. So this is a book that I just suggest all of you get to share with your neighbors and your friends, and it'll help you to understand even better what's going on. And remember what Dr. Malone just said, is we need to start more time with family and friends, more developing of relationships.
Commitment to community.
Church, community, football, you know, whatever is your identity, then customs, histories of your family line, all of that need not to be lost, and that's one thing we can do. And we have evidence now that people around the world are beginning to fight back for this very reason.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Malone, this book will be a great contribution to that, and you certainly are too, for speaking the truth. So thank you.
Thanks for having
me
on, Sandy.
Thank you. God bless
you. Good to see
you
again.
Good to see you too.
Thank you.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
A recent Danish study shows that a year after aborting, women exhibited a 50% higher likelihood of first-time psychiatric treatments and an 87% higher likelihood of personality and behavior disorders. Well, I want you to know that preborn treats the whole woman, body, mind, and soul. It's not just the baby that they save. They really do tend to the mother and also, of course, the baby growing inside of her. If you're looking for a great investment for your year-end write-offs, choose preborn. Donating is simple. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Just a few more things, just some observations about that discussion. You know, he mentioned his approach by that Vice reporter wanted to talk to him and how Jill, his wife, recommended that he not do that. And then he talked about how this reporter feels like he's been hoodwinked. It reminded me very much of an experience I had when I was in D.C. as president of Concerned Women for America, because I covered a lot of issues. I was, as I've said to you before, on television all the time, constantly, about a million issues, because I had been a talk show host, so I followed as much as I could, just about everything, except, as I say, dogs and sports. Can't talk about those things. But I did cover, of course, the sexual issues, whether it was homosexuality, gay marriage, chastity for women, not chastity, but purity, all kinds of things that were very controversial. And I will never forget, well, one time I was, I think at ABC or CBS, I don't recall, and a young woman who was a director on the set walked me out to the door and asked me about what I was talking about when it came to abstinence. And she wanted to know. It was just really something. She was part of the team, but she wanted to talk to me privately. And then secondly, when I was, I got a call from a young filmmaker in Greenwich Village, and she wanted to drive down from New York City to meet with me personally and film me on, I suppose it was the LGBTQ issues. I'm not sure. It must have been that. And so she came down. We used the conference room in my apartment building, and she did film. She asked me a lot of questions. You have to understand that Greenwich Village is probably the most constant, at least it has been, the highest concentration of lesbian and gay and all kinds of transgender now, I'm sure, persons. And she, as soon as we finished taping, she said to me, she said, "Can I talk to you?" And so we sat down at the table, and she told me that she had been moved there because she was very compassionate and loving. She had so many gay friends, but they were dying. They were dying in record numbers. They were dying of AIDS and all these diseases, and there's a lot of abuse in that community. And she was really rethinking her strong support of that lifestyle and deeply moved that she would drive all the way from New York City to talk to me in Washington, D.C., in the guise of doing an interview. It was an amazing conversation. We talked about God and everything, but I'll never forget how puzzled she was that all the things she had been taught might not be true. And so people are waking up. The truth is powerful. I think that's what Dr. Malone is really expressing with all of his various complex explanations. There is in the heart of man a desire for truth. Our God is the God of all truth. And so as we explore, I find honest people, honest men, just like C.S. Lewis and maybe even Dr. Malone at some point, I'm not sure where he is spiritually yet. I think he's a little more soft toward Christianity than he maybe once was when I first talked to him. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But I even, you know, Elon Musk is beginning to sort of embrace the principles of Christ, even if he hasn't embraced Jesus. It's a time when people are thinking. I see on TikTok, I saw a long video sent to me just this couple of days ago, a young girl, beautiful, and she's very profane, but she says, I've just found out, she's angry. Everything I've been told is a lie. It's a lie. And then she goes through very articulately and spells out all those things. I believe that God is at work in our world. And I don't care what the powers of the age have planned. If God should will it, they will come to nothing. And so I just think our marching plan is to be faithful, to seek God, to seek His word, be in prayer. For those of you that are searching, keep searching. Until you find Him, it will change your life. And so with that, well, this is the conclusion. I hope you have enjoyed these discussions, part one and part two, with Dr. Robert Malone. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, who allows you to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, for now, thank you. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.